Okay, welcome, Vashon Amori Islands. This is History Worth Hearing. I'm your host, Chris Austin. This is a presentation of the Vashon Heritage Museum, and one thing we'd like to do is promote our monthly talk, which this month of October 13th, I believe, is regarding the BioBlitz. And we are lucky enough to have the president of the Vashon Nature Center, Bianca Perla, here. Welcome, Bianca.
Thanks, Chris.
This BioBlitz is an interesting name to. First of all, how did they come up with that?
Well, it's pretty apt. It's definitely a blitz. It's a 24-hour species inventory, so you're on the clock, and you get teams of experts out in the field, and you survey a certain spot. A certain area for 24 hours and try to find as many species as you can and document the presence of those species. And so it's actually a international effort now, and anybody can do it. And it was started in 1996 by the National Park Service. One of the rangers at a national park in Washington, D.C. actually wanted to raise awareness about biodiversity and about all the different living creatures that live right alongside us every day. And so she came up with this idea of, you know, inviting experts in and the public and having teams of people looking for everything that they could find in a certain area.
And that's flora, fauna, everything that's alive.
Mm-hmm. Everything that's alive.
Now, how far down do the experts get to? Do they get to like microorganisms or to...
Well, I mean, it depends on, you know, everybody has their own flavor of BioBlitz because it's just basically a concept or an idea. But what we do here, just for ease of, you know, it's field identification. So we just identify what we can identify in the field in that 24 hours. And so, you know, for insects, we only go down to 2 millimeters. Oh. You know, anything smaller than that, you really can't do any good identification on. And, you know, we're identifying a lot of the times taxonomic groups, not necessarily species. So maybe we'll just, especially for the insects and some of the fungus.
So the class and the genus.
We get down to a taxonomic level, like an order or a family, but we can't get all the way down to species.
Genus species, yeah, okay.
But
Well, that's still pretty good.
And you still get a lot of the idea of the variety because, you know, there's just, you don't even have to get down to the species level to realize how much variety there is in, you know, black flies or, you know, different insects.
Oh my gosh. So what, I mean, are you selecting like riparian environments or, all water or all land or what?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. We're basically trying to just take snapshots of different places on the island. And so there's lots of scalable things going on here. So basically on Vashon, what we're trying to do is find representative places all around different types of habitats on the island. So we started at Neal Point, which is on the south eastern tip of Vashon. And at the time, that was our first BioBlitz in 2012. And that's a Neal Point natural area, is a King County natural area that doesn't really get visited very much because it's not very accessible. But it was someplace new and exciting, and we all wanted to know what was living there. And so we started with that one, and that has shoreline, and it has some ponds, and it has forest. And then we decided, well, we've done a little bit on the south end of the island. Let's move up north. And we did Christensen Creek. So we did the whole watershed for Christensen. And so that includes Liza Beulah, because that's where it comes out. We looked at a couple private land parcels, and then also Christensen Pond, which is the land trust preserve in that watershed. And so we pick places that are, a lot of times we do watersheds. Sometimes we do just areas that are ecologically kind of make sense in terms of the habitat. We did one year, Maury Island, all of the protected areas on Maury Island. So Docton Forest, Maury Island Natural Area, Maury Island Marine Park. And so we got kind of a view of those protected areas on Vashon. Another time we did the Ellisport Creek watershed, and we concluded Chautauqua, and the schools helped us do the Chautauqua Forest Survey. And then the public did, you know, helped us with the creek and the beach down at Tramp Harbor.
So how do you manage all? I mean, well, I guess I should ask first, how many people are participating in this?
We usually get over a little over 100 each time, 100 to 150. And that's including, you know, expert scientists that and naturalists that lead the trips or the teams that go out into the field. And then, you know, people from the public who help find things of all ages. And I think we did kind of an assessment of how many people throughout. We've done 7 BioBlitzes in these last 10 years. And so it's been about 900 people total that have participated, which is pretty cool. And people, now that we have this new platform called iNaturalist, which is it's an online data app where you can take pictures and geolocate your species records. A lot of people can participate just from home.
That's great.
So when we have a certain boundary for a BioBlitz that we've drawn, we're only going to places where we have permission to go. But if you're a private landowner, you can, and you're curious about what's on your property and you want to contribute, then you can use this iNaturalist app to survey your property. And we had some people doing that this last BioBlitz this summer. It was in heart of town. So
is the iNaturalist, is that like available all year long?
Yeah, it's a really cool app that was created by some college students and is now housed in the California Academy of Sciences.
It's become kind of a
department of the California Academy of Sciences. And some of those kids the college kids that created the app are now, you know, working there and it's being used all over the world. It's a really amazing app. And anybody can use it. You have to have an account. They have another version called iSeek, and that's for younger kids can use that because they don't have to have an account. So if they don't want a social media presence at all, they can still use that. It doesn't have the full functionality of iNaturalist, which, you know, allows people from all over the world to look at your record and make an ID for you.
Yeah, that was my question. Like,
pretty cool.
If you don't know what it is that you're uploading, there's experts to tell you.
Yeah. And they also have an artificial intelligence program that's learning.
Yeah.
Based on all the data that they're getting and the classifications that these experts are making. And so it can actually tell you with pretty great accuracy what you're seeing just from the photo, which is amazing.
Yeah. I was wondering if there was any AI that, you know, could be deep learning and then it's almost automation. Like it's no human touch.
Yeah. I mean, it's great because it's automation and it's checked. It's checked by, you know, humans. So you can get research grade, they call them research grade observations, which is pretty cool that they've been checked by, you know, the AI has spit out what it is, and then they've been checked by 3 or 4 experts, and then it becomes research grade. So you're pretty sure you know what you've got there. So it's pretty neat. That actually ties into the kind of the bigger scale that that we are fitting into a project that is happening all throughout the Salish Sea to collect biodiversity data with the idea that we can build this atlas of biodiversity for the Salish Sea.
Well, I was curious if this data is then aggregated up and it's part of a bigger thing. So it is.
That's great. And Andrew Simon, who's a colleague of mine up at Galliano, BC, is going for his PhD soon. And his big project is going to be collating all of this data that a lot of groups are taking on a lot of the island, you know, Gulf Islands and even higher up in the Salish Sea and some in Squamish and all over the place. There's a lot of groups that are contributing these community science efforts to collect data, and he's going to collate it all and create some pretty cool stuff for his.
Yeah. So not all of his PhD is in the field. It's in
no
computer.
Auto's on the computer. Yep. Wow.
Well, I have a very important question. I'm being attacked as we speak by a bug, and I call it a stink bug.
Uh-huh.
Do you know what that is? Do you know what that is?
Does it has kind of like a does it have a cross on the back of its shield? It's like a shield bug.
Oh. Well, now he's gone. Okay. He's going around my head.
Well, you know what, Chris? Take a picture of it and put it on iNaturalist and you'll get your answer.
The IC, because I don't want to. I need the simple one. Huh. Have you found any new species this way?
We haven't found new species for the world, but we have found in our Christensen Creek watershed BioBlitz in 2014, we have a lichen expert that comes over from the Southworth, and Phoebe Goit, and she found this little twig down in the bottom of the old growth forest in Christensen Creek Ravine. And on it was this little tiny something. She didn't know if it was, she thought it was a lichen. So she took it home to look under the microscope, but it turned out it wasn't a lichen. It was this little cupped, it looked like a little tiny cup with an egg in it. But it was only about a millimeter across. So it was tiny.
Whoa.
And she had no idea what it was. She said, no, it doesn't look like any lichen I've ever seen. So then we passed this photo of it that she took under the microscope around to, we thought, well, maybe it's an insect egg or maybe it's a fungi. And we sent it to fungi experts and insect people, and nobody knew what it was. And finally, through the grapevine, all the way over on the East Coast in Cornell, we got some scientists who knew what it was. And it was a little fungi called Corticium minciae. And it's a little egg cup fungi. So the cup is tiny, and the little, what we thought was an egg inside of it is a spore. And so when the rain falls, it falls in the cup and splashes the spore out.
Really? The spore, that's its dispersal method.
Of the life cycle of this fungi. And when it's in its adult form, it's more of a kind of a sheet of fungi. So that was kind of interesting. And so we looked it up, and there wasn't any record of it for the United States or for Washington state. And so Phoebe still had the specimens. So we contacted the Burke Herbarium and said, do you want this? And they looked through their records and they said, you're right, there's no record of this existing in Washington. And so it's now at that little stick from the bottom of Christensen Ravine is in the Burke Herbarium.
Wow.
And is the only record of that species for the state. So that's pretty exciting.
We're famous now.
Well, Phoebe is her name.
Well, is that, you know, as we kind of alluded to earlier with global warming, should we expect more things like that? Like species migrating? You know,
that's a good question. And that's one of the questions we're hoping a database like this can help us, you know, kind of stay on top of. I mean, it's basically just a community-wide way of noticing what's around us, you know, noticing what's living here and witnessing it so that we know what's here and we can see how it's changing. One thing that happened in our last BioBlitz is we had connection with Bruce Holman, who has a friend who's a bat biologist in Australia. We got these bat detectors that can pick up the calls of bats. And so we did that survey at Fisher Pond. And before that survey, we knew about three different species of bats that we know from, you know, various surveys that are on the island. And we, it surprised us because we got 9 species.
Oh my goodness, really?
Over Christensen Pond, and I mean, sorry, Fisher Pond, and two of them don't necessarily exist here. They're more east of the mountains. And so we're looking at whether, how sure we are of those recordings being matched to those. But that's one possibility of either migration due to global warming or due to storm events, you know, that they get blown over, or fire displacement, or other things that can be connected to global warming, where we're seeing these species that don't normally exist here, but are visiting or have been blown here for various reasons. Yeah.
All right. Hold on a second. I'm going to get my camera. Can you see it?
Oh, yeah. That looks more like a weevil.
A weevil?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Huh. Well, you got like some flour or other things in your house. I think you should take a nice, good close-up of that. I can't see it because it's in silhouette. It's really hard.
Yeah, that's a bad place.
But yeah, take a picture of it when we're done here, if it's still hanging around, and put it on iNaturalist. You'll be surprised.
So I was reading an article recently, and this is happening back east of you'll know the species, but it is so invasive and it's so destructive that they say the catchphrase was "see it, squash it." Do you know what this was? Did this ring a bell? And it was in the news. I thought maybe you picked it up, and I'm just wondering, do we have a similar thing, like something that's coming here that is so destructive to, you know, agriculture or something like that we really need to be worried about?
I don't think there's something that there's definitely things that are threatening the kind of the ecological integrity, but nothing that's that I can think of that's that level. I mean, we've got, you know, reed canary grass, which chokes out a lot of our riparian vegetation. We've got knotweed, Japanese knotweed, that does the same thing around creeks, kind of forms a monoculture, and of course, ivy and other things like that. We've got the hornet, the Asian hornet from Asia that we're just seeing coming in. That could be pretty devastating for pollinators. And, you know, really, if it got, we have perfect habitat for it here on Vashon. So if it did ever get here, it'd be really important to find it right away. But, you know, like that's more of that's a human safety issue, and it's also, you know, a concern for honeybees, but it's not something that's going to absolutely wipe out the whole integrity of, you know,
sure. But honeybees are island. So much
there's
pressure.
You know, zebra mussels are also a concern, and green crab, but we for green crab, we have very few habitats that would actually sustain them. You know, Rob's Lagoon or maybe KBR Marsh would be areas that would, but they, the rest of our beaches aren't really the type of habitat that they like. So, that's always a concern and always an issue. But I don't think there's anything that I'm staying up all night thinking about.
This was the spotted lanternfly. I just looked it up.
Okay.
See it, squash it thing. but the zebra mussels, that they've been invasive. I've seen, like, I've read about them for decades. They come in on the trade ships and spread.
Yeah, a lot of stuff comes in on ballast water.
Ballast water.
Yeah. I mean, that's in a way how some of the green crabs got started too, as well. We're a species that moves a lot of stuff. We got a lot of hitchhikers.
So you always read about invasive species in Florida. Florida just seems to be this magnet for everything, and they're, it always seems like our species are wimps compared to these other things, like boa constrictors or, you know, Nile lizards, reptiles. What's up with that? What's North America?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, the Pacific Northwest is a great place to grow up loving nature and exploring nature, because we really don't have a lot of stuff that harms.
No, and I'm very thankful for that. You know, really no poisonous snakes. I guess a Pacific rattlesnake or something like
that's
that.
That's on the east side. Yeah, not here on Vashon. I mean, we got poison oak. Yeah, we're pretty lucky around here. That's pretty, we've got some pretty benign nature. Yeah, I don't know, you know, possibly in those kind of more tropical areas, there's just more competition, there's more biodiversity, there's more of a need to have those defenses.
Yeah, that's a good point. Absolutely, yeah. Well, how do islanders get involved with this?
Well, we advertise it every year, and there's plenty of different ways to get involved. When the event comes, people can just, we usually have a base camp, which is our kind of base of operations. We have all of our guidebooks and, you know, field guides there. We have some microscopes, and then we have a check-in table and usually some educational displays that people can look at. And so you can come and you can visit base camp if that's, you know, all you want to do is just kind of get a flavor for it. Or you can sign up. We usually have a ticket sign up for the different shifts. So you can look at the whole schedule and pick a different shift that you want to go out on. For example, you know, maybe the plant group is going out from 10 to 12 and you want to join that. And then, you know, at 10 p.m. we start the bat surveys, and at 11 p.m. we start black lighting for insects. So we put up a big sheet with a black light, and all these moths and night flying wasps and other things come to that, and we can calculate that. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of things that people can do. And really, you know, it's, you get to learn from the people who are the team leaders, but you also really do play a big part in finding things. Cause I've noticed that, especially kids, and a lot of times people who have no background in the organisms they're trying to find can find things better than the experts, because they don't have a certain
preconceived
kind of, you know, idea in their head of where they're going to be. Like when we did our Maury Island survey in 2015, our base camp was Docton Park, and Maury is super, super dry. So we weren't finding any amphibians, you know, and we weren't even really looking that hard for them, because we figured, well, you know, we're not going to have much success. And part of the way through the first or the oh no the morning of the, you know, kind of just before we were closing down, a little girl came running across the parking lot screaming, "Bianca, Bianca, Bianca!" And she was running and running and running, and and I said, "What, Zay?" And she goes, "I found it." And she had found the only amphibian of the entire count,
really,
which was an Encetina, which is a little salamander that's a land salamander, and it was curled up in a little fern by the side of the parking lot, a place we would never look, hot, dry, you know, shaded, because it was a fern. But so I think people do really have we wouldn't have recorded any amphibians without her, you know? So I think people tend to not want to join because they think that there's not much that they can contribute. And I just want to say there, that's completely false, that, you know, like most of the really cool finds have been people who aren't experts and aren't looking in particular places, and they find the things that are anomalies. You know?
And just another set of eyes out there, you know, looking and, boy, I can see that. Like, as an expert, you're kind of zoned in to where you're expected to find these things. But nature doesn't always play by the rules, I guess.
No, it hardly ever does. So, and you know, it's just a fun feeling of camaraderie to be out there with a lot of people in this place that's your home, and just discovering with new eyes how much life there is and how many little mini dramas are going on outside the human world every day, you know, right under our noses. And it's a really cool feeling and a really great change of perspective. to see the island that way.
Yeah. So all of those, the base camp and all the times that people go out, that's all on our website, I imagine, right?
And that's, yeah. And we have under our programs tab, we have a little, BioBlitz is one of our programs. So you can read more about it there.
Okay.
And then whenever we have we usually do BioBlitz events in the summer just because it's better weather. But we, for a while, have been talking about, we need to do them different times a year because you pick up different things, you know.
Right. Well,
we could get a much better fungi list, for example, if we did it in November.
Of course.
So we may change it up a little bit. We'll see at some point. But yeah.
I'm sure there's some migratory species that you just wouldn't pick up at certain times of year.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. Now, what's the website?
VashonNatureCenter.org.
.org. Okay. And this talk is on, did I get the right date? Is it, it's October 13th?
I believe that's right. Let's see. Yes, it's October 13th at 7. Okay.
7 p.m. and everybody can go to the VashonHeritageMuseum.org, sign up for free. It's Zoom. And this has been interesting. And I'm sure your talk is going to have slides, mm-hmm. and a lot of good pictures. And I'm really looking forward to it.
Great. Yeah, I am too.
Now, is it just you or will you have other speakers?
Right now, it's just me. Andrew Simon, who I mentioned before, might join.
Okay.
But he's right now doing research in the Arctic Circle and not available by any sort of communication device. So we'll see if he gets back in time. He'll join us.
Okay. <Yeah. laughs> Well, thank you for so much for doing this today. And I'd like to tell our listeners it's October 13th at 7 p.m. and it's BioBlitz with Bianca Perla. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris.